I'm done doubting Russell Wilson. But his ability to stay calm and lead drive, whether it's week two or the playoffs or the Super Bowl, he always puts them in a position to be successful.
And Russell takes the snap, drops back. He's going to throw down the middle. He's got a man. The ball is caught.
Game over, baby.
Touchdown. The game is over. The Seahawks are going back to the Super Bowl.
This is Hawks Talk.
Well, happy Monday to you, Seahawk fans, and welcome to Playoff Edition 1.0 of Hawks Talk here on CSN and iTunes. And luckily for us, this won't be the final episode of the season, not after Saturday and the Seahawks' wire-to-wire 26-6 victory over the woefully inadequate Detroit Lions, surprisingly inadequate. Look, I predicted a Seahawks victory last week, as I think most pundits did, but I didn't see a victory so one-sided coming. Now, for the better part of a month, Seattle's defense, and its secondary specifically, had been in a funk, one that directly correlated with Earl Thomas being lost for the season. Seattle was allowing opposing quarterbacks a passer rating of just over 77 before Thomas's injury, and then they were allowing a rating of 99 after he was out. Many times, numbers in sports, especially in the NFL, can be blown out of proportion a bit. But that stat was telling. No matter how good the Seahawks' defensive front seven was, and it has been dominant, and no matter how good Cam Chancellor or Richard Sherman are, or how good DeShon Shedd has been playing, the most valuable member of the Seattle defense is Earl Thomas. And without him, I expected the Lions, led by Matthew Stafford and Golden Tate, to find success through the air. Man, was I wrong. Now, the following tidbits of information came from our friends at Pro Football Focus, and they really focus in and show just how dominant Seattle's defense was. The first one here, it says, the Lions did not want to test Richard Sherman. Sherman lined up on the left side of the field on 36 of 39 snaps, and it wasn't until the fourth quarter that the Lions targeted his side of the field. That's incredible. Sherman was only targeted once in the fourth quarter and did not allow a reception on his way, and he had to an 85.2 overall grade. Now, if you follow Pro Football Focus, and we use them a lot throughout the year, that's a pretty good overall grade. You want your defensive guys, especially in the secondary, the way as good as they have been, you want them to be in the mid to upper 80s, and that's right where Sherman was. Another little nugget here from Pro Football Focus says, DeShon Shedd was locked in on the right side of the field as well after Sherman shut down the other side. Shedd was targeted 8 times, all on the right side of the field, but did not allow a single pass to be completed. Now, when you have two guys in Sherman and Shedd that are completely shutting down the outside of the field, it doesn't really matter who's playing safety. And obviously, with Thomas out and Chancellor being the main star back there, you knew it, Detroit was going to try to exploit that side of the field. But to have that many attempts go over the middle because they were completely avoiding the outside, and that shows a lot of respect, I think, for DeShon Shedd, who has really taken off this past year and established himself as a very solid starting corner in this league. Holding the Lions to 6 points was key, and it won't come as a complete shock because, again, Seattle's defense was still top seven all year long despite the dip towards the end of the year after Thomas was injured. The surprising part of the game came on the offensive side of the ball, where Seattle actually found a lot of success on the ground. Thomas Rawls finished with 161 yards, but most exciting, I think, if you're a Seahawks fan, especially going forward, is that Seattle stuck with the run even after they got off to a slow start in the game. I think in the second or third possession, over the stretch of two possessions, they ran the ball 9 straight times, and it showed that Carroll and Tom Cable were wanting to establish the run because they know that in these playoffs, they're not going to be able to be a 70-30 or an 80-20 passing team. It's not going to work. They're going to face too many talented teams and too many teams that are going to be able to stop or at least slow down Russell Wilson if there's no threat of a run game. Our friend Chuck Powell from KJR in Seattle, he took to the airwaves this morning and he talked a little bit about the run game. Like, what does it mean going forward? Is it a one-time thing or did they really stumble onto something that they can use going forward? Is it sustainable? It sure sounds like Rawls is embracing his and his team's role. You'll hear from him as well in this clip here we're about to play. And they sound focused, like they're re-energized, and they're almost embracing this role of, hey, we're the disrespected ones, talking about him and the offensive line. Because you know they know, they don't need to read the press clippings to know that they have not been good this year. So really interesting, and pay attention to what Rawls has to say in this clip from Chuck Powell.
it's funny how the mentality changes. Thomas Rawls, who has had a rather frustrating year, not only with injuries, but playing behind an offensive line that can't run block, and his stats were pretty much terrible during the course of the season. Boy, you break out with a historic playoff performance against the Detroit Lions, and suddenly he feels like the Hawks are the hunters.
We handling business right now. We on the hunt. We trying to go as far in the championship run. We trying to see wherever it leads us, and just deal with the result whenever it comes.
Do the Hawks suddenly have a running game? That's item number two on hour five. Do the Hawks have a running game? Now I'm going to go ahead and admit how wrong I was about the running game going into this game. I had said I'd seen enough. I'd made that really clear. It was a big topic of our program last week. I had seen enough of banging your head against the wall and trying to run the football behind this offensive line. And that the best way to win going forward is going to be just to hand the ball to Russell Wilson and hope that your defense remembers that it is as good a defense in the National Football League and plays that way going forward. So I was ready to abandon the running game entirely. Ian told me during the clash of the KJR voices, you can't do it. If we're going to go on this run, we got to be able to run the football. Well, boy, did they run the football.
First down and goal from the four. Over right guard, Thomas Rawls for the touchdown.
We had our identity. We wanted to run the ball. We wanted to do it on the ground. We wanted to maintain our identity and stay true. And that's exactly what we did and showed. And tonight, you know, we had a great week of preparation also. You know, we've been running the ball. The offensive line been doing a great job, tremendous job.
27 carries, 161 yards for Rawls, 111 yards rushing by halftime. I'm still not buying that this was the game plan, though, Tom. I'm still not buying that this was the game plan. I think that maybe Daryl Bevel and Pete Carroll were a lot more on board with what we were saying on this show last week than they will ever admit. As a matter of fact, I know that Pete Carroll has said every game we got to get 20 catches, carries for Thomas Rawls. I mean, damn near every game this year, Pete has mentioned at some point when Rawls has been healthy, we got to get him 20 touches. That's the message that he sends out prior to every game, that we have to establish the run. We have to. We have to commit to it. We can't back down. And then it really doesn't happen, purely out of ineffectiveness. Look, I know that the Seahawks want to run the football. There's not a team in the National Football League. The Green Bay Packers right now, if they can get on a roll running the football with Ty Montgomery, they'll run the football 30 times if they get on the roll that the Seahawks got off to against the Detroit Lions on Saturday night. But I'm not buying that it was the game plan. Maybe I'm just being stubborn. But I'm not buying that that's the game plan. First play of the game, pass. First two or three plays of the game, passes. Second series, run, pass, 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 run, pass, pass. That's 5 out of 8. First 11 plays of the game, pass calls, play calls from the sidelines, 7 of them were passes. But in those two series, both of which failed and you ended up with 0 points, it was obvious that George Fant could not block Ziggy Ansah. Both of those series ended with Fant giving up sacks. And as a matter of fact, the second series ended up with back-to-back sacks for the Detroit Lions. So they're two possessions in. The Lions already have 3 sacks. And suddenly, the Seahawks are like, okay, Terrell Austin, defensive coordinator for the Lions, has clearly game planned to stop our passing game. So, what do? You adjust. And then, on the third possession of the game, run. 9 straight runs. 9 straight runs. I don't think that that was the game plan, that by the third possession, even though we're going to try to throw the ball the first two possessions, by the third possession, all we're going to do is run.
I think the big talk this morning and yesterday as well, it is about that run game, because it really was the biggest development that came out of Saturday, because we knew that Wilson would be able to find success down the field. I mean, Detroit did not come in with a juggernaut defense. But if Seattle can establish the run in the sense that they can move the chains even a little bit. I mean, we're not talking, they don't need to have the Dallas Cowboys running game. That was never part of the game plan. That was never going to be how they found success. But when they have struggled this year, it's when they haven't even been able to get first downs or create second and short or third and short. A lot of times when they've really, the games they've struggled in where they've struggled to run the ball, it's because they have attempted to run on first down and they're left with third and nine or third and eight or third and 12 because they've been hitting the backfield because the offensive line cannot block anybody. But if going forward, if they can set up second and six, third and three, that opens up an entire playbook for Wilson and Carroll to really take advantage of the speed and the mismatches they have on the outside. Or if they really want to run a run with it, give it to Rawls again. He runs like a man possessed, and if you watch him, he is so fun to watch. And after the game, Rawls spoke to the media, and we'll play that here in a little bit.
I'm doing great, actually. Feeling good. Feeling every bit of those carries right now.
Is that just the best you felt all season long with kind of the ups and downs you've gone through?
I'm not sure because we won games that was kind of tough, but I can say that it was more gratifying because, you know, it's God's time and the time is now. You know, we in the playoffs and you know, we have some struggles and some adversity, you know, during the season up and down with the run game and everything like that. But like I always say, that's God's time and not man's.
We've heard a lot of people say this game kind of felt like Seahawks football with the run game and the defense.
Most definitely.
I mean,
yeah.
Is that how you felt?
Most definitely. I think offensively, defensively, even in this kicking game, you know, we had our identity. We wanted to run the ball. We wanted to do it on the ground. We wanted to maintain our identity and stay true. And that's exactly what we did and showed. And tonight, you know, we had a great week of preparation also. You know, we've been running the ball. The offensive line been doing a great job, tremendous job. And we know the defense is going to hold us down. And those guys did a great job.
Break Marshawn Lynch's postseason
rushing. Ain't a lot, you know. Marshawn Lynch, looked up to him. Still do. Still communicate with him. Still talk to him. Just over time, I'll just reminisce back when I was younger, just watching him. Like, man, hopefully one day. And that day is now. So, you know, I'm kind of lost for words, man. I'm so grateful for the opportunity, man, just to be a part of this whole organization. I'm just a kid from Flint, man. Nothing special. I'm a kid from Flint just with a lot of heart and toughness and just want to go as far as I can.
When's the last time you talked to Marshawn?
I think maybe a few weeks ago. Yeah, he came over by the building and, you know, I got a chance to talk to him and you know, he just wanted to make sure that my mind was right going into this playoffs and everything like that. But other than that, I mean, he just Marshawn.
See Russell coming downfield blocking for you on that long.
Yeah, I did. But you know what? We practiced that. You know, it doesn't matter because he's a quarterback. I'm pretty sure a lot of people was wondering why he did it. But you know, it just showed a determination and a guy who's so unselfish and a guy who wants to win. It doesn't matter. You know, it doesn't matter who got it or who's blocking. It doesn't matter. We all are here together I'm so thankful that a guy next to me is thinking of me that way too.
When you got in the end zone, it seemed like you jumped out 10 feet in the air, like maybe twice in that span. Once you got in the end zone, just what was going through your head?
I'm excited. I'm like I told you, I'm still a kid from Flint, Michigan. When I get excited, I jump around a lot, as y'all can see, and I try to show it. I try to express it, and also. I know my offensive linemen, they love it. They love it when I jump up and I give them a headbutt and stuff like that. Try to juice these guys up, man. It's just one of those things where I'm grateful to, you know, even touch the football and to even more grateful to get in the end zone.
When did you feel like you most looked forward to getting
a goal
in this game today?
I felt it at the beginning. Yeah, I knew what was at stake. My offensive line knew what was at stake. This whole team, we playing for keeps. It doesn't matter. It's the playoffs. It's time to go. Whoever riding, we riding. Whoever not, they got to go. And everybody in this team, in this locker room, they riding.
You mentioned your offensive line. Just Pete said that was the best save run blocked maybe all year. How'd it look from your vantage point?
We was in sync. We gelled together pretty good, and I'm so proud of those guys because we got some new guys in there. We got some young guys in there, and for them to take on this challenge, they did a phenomenal job, and I'm so proud of those guys, and I just can't wait to get back to practice with those big fellas, man, because we can only grow. We can only get better.
So your sequence, when you're running the ball consistently like that, talk about your offensive line. What's it like in the huddle? Are they kind of like, let's keep rolling. We're feeling it right now. We're whipping those guys up front. So what was your mind?
Actually, it's kind of silent in the huddle. We got this thing where we just give each other a look. We just look each other in the eyes. It's a whole different connection. It's more to it than just running a play, going out there, throwing touchdowns, running touchdowns, run blocking. It's deeper than this. It's something that I can't necessarily put into words. You know, I can't verbally tell you, but it's a feeling. It's a real connection, you know, that you got to have and you got to maintain. And that's why previous weeks when things were tough with us, I still got to trust them. That's man's time. When God's time, oh, man. Anything can happen. Anything.
Does your props have any extra special meaning? Because that team was from Detroit, and that's where you obviously grew up.
Excuse me?
Does this performance for you have any extra special meaning? Because that was the Detroit Lions.
Well, you know, you know, it was kind of sweet, you know, just growing up, you know, back in Flint, Michigan, and you know, the Detroit Lions is the hometown team, but. You know, it doesn't matter who's in front of us. We're trying to knock them down, and it did you know feel kind of special because I know it's a lot of people back home, you know, watching the game and stuff like that, and I'm glad I can put a smile on their face too. But overall, man, we handling business right now. We on the hunt. We trying to go as far in the championship run. We trying to see wherever it leads us, and just deal with the result whenever it comes.
Here's Chuck Powell again talking about how he doesn't really know, obviously, what the game plan going in was, but we can pretty much assume that establishing this giant running game was probably not it.
Time and time again, I mean, man, playoffs is just a completely different season. It's a completely different reset. And I have seen plenty of teams. They showed the stat. Did you see the stat with Al Michaels and Chris Conte during the broadcast where they pointed out that stat of the last 10 Super Bowl winners and their bad record in their last four games of the regular season? So, yeah, we didn't make that up. I mean, that's true. All that matters is once you get to the postseason that you start playing your good football. Doesn't matter how poorly you play down the stretch. And I do believe that the Seahawks are capable of going on this run. Now, are they going to do it running the football? If they can, awesome. If Pete Carroll gets to set a reset button at the end of the regular season, and you know, he didn't save these guys for the playoffs. He didn't go down the stretch saying, we're going to sit on this ability to run the football. You know what? We're going to make them think that we can't. And we're going to give up the number two seed because we're not worried about the Lions. And we're gonna make everybody think we can't run the football, and then when the playoffs start, we're gonna punch him in the mouth. That's not what he did. So I'm certainly not convinced here on a Monday morning that everything is fixed based on this running game. I still am gonna hold true to the fact that I watched this team for 20 games, 4 preseason, 16 regular season games, and I still think they're gonna need to throw the football more often to go on this 4-game winning streak that we're all hoping that they go on. If they can run the football, glorious. But I don't think after one game you've solved all of those woes.
So now Seattle gets the Atlanta Falcons. It's a rematch from earlier this season when the Seahawks knocked them off. They're coached by their former coordinator, Dan Quinn, obviously. Quinn and Carroll have a huge relationship going in the past. This matchup really sets up perfectly for the Seahawks. Atlanta's defense is suspect. They finished 25th overall in the league. Now, they only give up 104 yards per game on the ground, so they're pretty solid against the run, but they were terrible against the pass. They allowed 266 yards per game through the air, which not good heading into this week, especially after Wilson found another target last week, and we'll talk about that here in a minute. Now, if Seattle can have even, I would say, 75% of the success they had on the ground against Detroit, against Atlanta, the Falcons are going to have to really respect the ground game. And if they can do that, Wilson will have a field day, because like I said, he have found another weapon Saturday night in Paul Richardson. Richardson's someone that I have been touting all season long and waiting for him to really step up and establish himself as either the second or third receiver on this team. I think a lot of fans have been waiting for that as well. If Richardson can see the field consistently, now listen to this, he played in 55 of the 73 snaps on Saturday after playing just 35% of the team's snaps during the regular season. then Seattle may have a sure-handed deep threat that they've been missing. Richardson's not a burner. He's not a speed guy particularly. But if you watched him at Colorado, he's one of those receivers that just finds the ball. He has incredible hands, and he has deceptive speed. He had two spectacular catches on Saturday. One of them was the touchdown, obviously the one-handed, where he may have gotten away with a little bit of a face mask. He did get away with the face mask, but they didn't call it. He made the catch, got the touchdown, and he gives relief to Doug Baldwin and Jimmy Graham, obviously Seattle's two most potent offensive weapons. But because of the fact that the running game is so hit and miss and Atlanta's secondary is so bad, the best bet for Seattle will be to throw the ball. Not at a ridiculously high rate, but a solid 60-40 ratio is where they need to be to find success. And if Richardson adds to the depth, that will make things much, much easier. Atlanta's offense is potent. There's no way around it. Matt Ryan could very well be the MVP, be named the MVP, and no one would bat an eye. But if Seattle's defense plays like they did on Saturday, it's going to be very hard for the Falcons to score more than 21 points. And the way their defense is playing, I don't see a scenario where Seattle doesn't score at least 28. So you do the math. Especially, again, like I said, if they can establish even a semblance of the run game that they had and force Atlanta to bring up their safeties a little bit into the box, then I don't see a scenario which Atlanta can stop them. Seattle's likely going to be the underdog, and for good reason. Atlanta was the number two seed. They earned it. But this is the perfect matchup. If Seattle was going to get anyone for their first road game, Atlanta would definitely be their choice. They know Dan Quinn, and they know they can beat them since they've already done it once this year. And maybe, just maybe, Saturday's win over the Lions was the confidence boost that this team has needed. They really struggled down the stretch there. Got a win to end the regular season. But I think anything less than their performance they had on Saturday against Detroit would still leave this team feeling a little fragile in the back of their minds. They would never admit it because that's not the kind of team they are. But the 26-6 victory, as good as the defense played, as good as Rawls looked, I think that re-sparked and reinvigorated this team. And they realized, hey, you know what? Maybe we didn't finish the season the way we wanted, but we're still the Seahawks, and we still have the potential to win a Super Bowl. And no one can deny the talent that they have on this team. It's always been mental. It's always been upstairs for them. Maybe now they finally turn that corner. Well, we're going to recap it all next Monday. We'll be back here with Hawks Talk again. Will that be it? Or will Seattle have a date with either Green Bay or Dallas? We'll know by Monday. As good as Atlanta, Seattle's going to be, I think Dallas-Green Bay could be one of the most anticipated playoff games we've seen in a long time. Obviously, no one is playing better than Green Bay, and no one knows that like Seattle. They went in there and got their butts handed to them a few weeks ago. Is Dallas for real, or was a lot of the regular season a smokescreen? We're going to find that out. Seattle, obviously, after this game, if they can take care of business, which I think they can, I think they will, all eyes are going to be on that game of Dallas to find out where they go. And the chess match between Pete Carroll and Dan Quinn will be a lot of fun to watch, especially with their history and how they know each other. It'd be interesting to see who wins that battle, because that could be a really important key. Which one of them can out-scheme the other one, since they both know each other's tendencies so well. Thanks for listening, as always, and we'll talk to you next week after, hopefully, another Seattle Seahawks playoff victory.